the fuck is that guy?
Two legs, two arms, normal.
There was a bus that pulled up to a red light, and Little Nog tried to feed it a carrot while Big Nog was petting it. He thought it was a horse.
And he threw a big pity party for himself, crying on camera and shit. It's fucking just ridiculous.
Oh no, this guy, look at it, they knocked the bucket over. This is the Three Stooges. What are you freaks doing? Everybody's booing. Now there's even more pressure. Oh, now they're sweeping it out. That's good.
They're selling you all wolf tickets, people. You're eating them right up. George here is selling you wolf tickets. Dana here is selling you wolf tickets. The UFC is selling you some wolf tickets.
No, forget Jesus, people!
I was just like, I need to have his babies. I need to stay alive.
I have a huge cunt, Joe.
It's too big.
It's too big.
Like, beast in his home.
But, I'm not impressed by your performance.
Yeah, you too. How's it going?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
Good. Just watching the only dog I have left drinking.
I wish I had no dogs left.
Don't say that, you son of a bitch.
I thought I could be honest. No. Welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. My name is Matt. That is Mike Coughlin, who may or may not be a white supremacist. We're bringing you all the news in MMA, and we also occasionally talk about stuff.
Imagine somebody who's never heard this hearing the intro and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, that's why I did it. I just figured I'd jump right in and talk right over you. So, obviously, this past
Fuck you,
weekend,
Liberia.
What are they doing?
Oh, Liberia was a country established in the southwest of Africa. From former slaves, Madison
right.
actually shipped them over, and
yep.
The country isn't doing so well. They have this crazy dude who's now a Christian minister, but before that, he would rape and eat children.
Yeah.
Something Naked Butt or something like that is his name. Vice did a thing on him.
Yeah. Huh. I'll have to read up on that. The only thing I watched today was the first episode of Glow on Netflix. Have you seen that? It was okay. You got to give it a couple episodes, but it wasn't terrible. I don't know. We shall see. Maybe it can be something my wife and I watch, because it's kind of like got a chick feel to it, but it also has crappy wrestling. So maybe it's got something we'll both enjoy.
I like Alison Brie.
I don't know who she is. Is she the lead?
Probably. She's a chick from Community.
Yeah, I don't see much normal TV.
Brunette, kind of big breasts. Probably the lead, I think. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I only identify women by their breast size these days, though. So.
Okay. Just these days? In the past, you didn't?
I used to be more sensitive, but now that I'm woke, I only look at the boobs.
Yeah, stay woke. Bellator had their biggest show this past weekend. It was in New York City at Madison Square Garden. Did you hear about this?
I, one or two things amidst the cacophony of McGregor and Mayweather, yeah.
Yeah, so this show drew 12,133 people and did a $1.6 million gate. Obviously nowhere near what UFC 205 did, but nobody anticipated anything like that. Obviously, with the main event of Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva, you were going to have a tough time competing with Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez. But as it was, the show was fairly successful. I think the prelims on Spike did it averaged like 900,000 viewers and 1.1 million for the main event on the prelims, which was a very boring, what I would probably call bad fight between Ryan Bader and Phil Davis. So it did okay, the prelims, and usually that can be an indicator of buys, but we'll see if this translates. It probably won't, but we will see. In the main event, Sonnen defeated Silva by unanimous decision 30-26, 30-27, and 30-27. Pretty much Chill. It was what I expected. I think you didn't like Chill's chances in this fight, but I kind of saw him just taking Silva down, and that's what he did for most of the fight. He didn't take much damage. He was on top and kind of just got some ground and pound, side control a couple times. Didn't do a lot of damage, was never close to finishing, but was always in control.
Yeah, I guess I was impressed by Sonnen more than anybody. Silva, he had a few moments here and there. He kind of clipped Sonnen and dropped him a little bit. But for the most part, Sonnen really showed that his wrestling was on point, or on fleek, as the kids say. He was able to power through with his takedowns. And from there, he just kind of grinded out a three-round decision. So he did what he needed to do. It's just two old dudes, and if anybody wants a Legends division in the UFC, well, it's just called Bellator, so enjoy it.
After the fight, Chael called out Fedor, who was an interesting choice because he actually lost in the co-main, and he's also been talking about Rory McDonald. Where do you see Chael going next? Obviously, he's with Bellator for a while. He wants to keep fighting. He's probably getting decent money to do it. Where does he go from here?
I honestly have no idea. He cut a promo that was like, it was a tale of two cities. The first part where he said, looking around, and I hate New York. I thought that was a really good line. I thought it worked well. Then he called out Fyodor. He said that he beat Tito in 30 seconds, which, again, it's typical Chael where he just says these things. But it's like he doesn't understand totally that there's a way to still be charismatic without looking like a fucking moron. And he definitely did that when he, you know, when you just flat out lie, everything else you say just becomes a pure joke. And you don't want to be a joke. You want to be able to straddle the line and be like, you know, I fought Tito Ortiz. I took him on. He's way bigger than me. He had a cheat to beat me. It wasn't a real loss, blah, blah, blah. And then when whatever else he says, you go, okay, whatever. He has this idea in his head. But when he says, I beat Tito, it's embarrassing. There's, you know, you literally tapped out to the man. Like, there's no right. question about it. Right. You know, challenging Fyodor, it's a good idea for him. It's a big, look, it's probably, might be the biggest fight Bellator has money-wise. I mean, and if your Fyodor continues your long tradition of fighting blown-up middleweights, you know, again, Bellator, in my opinion, does not get judged by normal booking patterns. It's such a weird mixture of pride and, I would say, almost shooto, as far as, like, some of it's kind of very legitimate. But it's slowly becoming very, you know, dumbass. And we're seeing that more and more here. This whole pay-per-view is dumbass.
Did you catch during the main event people were chanting, fuck you, Tito, during the main event? And Tito was getting up and, like, yelling at the crowd and stuff. And I think Chael thought they were, like, booing him during the fight, but they were really giving Tito shit, I guess.
Well, it's probably because Tito was a most well-known person on the show.
Well, I found it interesting that Tito was, like, cage side, too, considering he's retired. It was almost like he was there to build a fight, because they kept showing him in the crowd. Usually they show, and they showed him repeatedly. It wasn't one of those one-off shots. They kept showing him while Chael was talking. It felt like they were building to a rematch, even though Chael called out, you know, Fedor, and then later in press conferences, Rory McDonald.
The Rory McDonald one is fucking very special from Chael. You know, Tito being there, whatever. He says he's retired.
Right.
He'll never retire.
Right.
He's a fucking loser. That's the only way to describe Tito. He married Jenna Jameson and got in, like, a domestic altercation and all this stuff. Nobody believes that Tito is retired. He's just Ken Shamrock 2.0. I don't know why they haven't done Ken and Tito 4 in Bellator. I guarantee that'd be a big fucking fight for them. You laugh, but guess what? That last fight was a long ass time ago. They'll talk it up, and Ken will say something. And Tito will be like, "Hey, yeah, you're addicted to opiates," and then they'll fight in Texas. So it works.
Good, very well. Good. What about Wanderlei? Does he fight again? Like, is Bellator going to bring him back, you think? And if he does come back, who do you put him in there with? It's like he's pushing 40 and has been knocked out a ton of times, and after like a 3.5-4 year layoff, comes in and looks like crap against Sonnen. Like, he wasn't really even close to stopping any of those takedowns, and obviously Sonnen's shot isn't what it used to be. What do you do with Vanderlei?
I have no idea, just because I don't know the full scope of the Bellator roster. I somebody at 185, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, or maybe he could fight that midget.
Oh, I know the perfect fight for Vanderlei.
Who's that?
I want to build the tension. I want to build the drama.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Melvin Manhoff.
Fucking A. Yeah, Melvin Manhoff.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's a perfect fight for both men. It'd be amazing. I would totally go out of my way to watch that fight.
Someone's getting knocked out quick.
Yeah, they're perfect for each other. It's just everything Vanderlei's done, everything Manhoff's done, just, oh, that fight has to happen. That should be amazing.
In the co-main event, we had, well, it was weird. The second to last main fight was actually Neiman Gracie versus Dave Marfone, because they couldn't fit it in on the prelims for whatever reason, so they ran it in between. But we're not even going to talk about that, because who cares? The co-main was Matt Mitrione defeating Fedor Emelianenko by knockout at 114 in the first round. This was another one where, like, it kind of went the way I thought. Fedor's not good at fighting anymore. He's 40 years old. He's been fighting cans for the last, you know, 5 years. Prior to that, he lost 3 straight. He got knocked out by Dan Henderson and Bigfoot and subbed by Verdum. That was a long time ago. Obviously, he hasn't gotten better. He's more slowing down, more on the decline than ever before. So you put him in there against a top 10-ish heavyweight in the world. Chances are the bigger, stronger, faster guy is going to win, and that's what happened. Essentially, they had a double knockdown. They both hit each other. I think it was with right hands. Both guys go down, but Mitrione gets up quicker and just pounds on Fedor and knocks him out cold. Again, just Fedor's old and slow, and he just gets beat up by everybody now.
It was pathetic. Mitrione sucks. I mean, when you say top 10-ish in the world, no, not even close.
If you look at the heavyweight rankings in the UFC, he'd be in there.
Maybe, but he's still garbage.
I'm not saying he's good, but I'm just saying he could. Fedor had a very difficult time with Fabio Maldonado, who's not a top 10-ish light heavyweight.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? How's he going to do against a bigger, stronger guy?
Well, we saw what he's going to do. He's going to take one fucking punch and then get ground and pounded into death. You know, it doesn't matter, because both guys are totally over the hill. And any legacy Fedor has, it is what it is. I don't hold any of these losses against him. He did when he went out there and got his payday. Let's face it. I think Fedor, his big coming out party was March 25th, 2003. And I know this because it was Pride 25, which I think is one of the greatest shows of all time, when he destroyed Rodrigo Nogueira. That was 2003. It's been 14 years since he had his pinnacle. That was the best he's ever been. Who cares what Fedor does anymore? It's done, and Mitrione sucks, and just two old dudes that are shouldn't be fighting, still fighting, and one of them hit the other harder than the other and followed it up with some ground and pound, and the fight ended.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, maybe 6-7 years ago, Fedor would have been the one that got up quicker and finished off Mitrione, but Mitrione's just a step quicker and got up quicker and recovered sooner.
6-7 years ago, I think that was when Fedor lost to Verdum.
Yeah.
It's been a long ass time. I was there when he fought Henderson. And that was probably 5 years ago, and Fedor sucks. He sucks for a long ass time. He's fought some cans, and then got a bullshit gift from against Maldonado. But
right.
You know, fuck you, Russia, you election hacking frauds.
For what it's worth, I'm going to read you 10 to 15 the heavyweights in UFC right now. Stefan Struve
would beat
Marcin Tybura.
I don't know who that is.
Jim Johnson. Good mustache.
Yeah, the mustache guy, yeah. He beat
Fury. Andre Arlovsky. Alexei Olenek. And Daniel Omelianchuk.
Oh, Daniel Omelianchuk is fighting soon.
I'm just saying, like, Mitrione could very well be in that mix. If you got to win two out of five fights at heavyweight, you're in the top 15. He could do that in theory. Whatever.
Five heavyweights. What a joke.
Because I don't know. They can't make light heavyweight, I guess. Why do we have 145-pound women? Okay. What else is going on? Does Fedor ever fight again?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because Russians are stupid and there's a lot of money involved. His family's probably held hostage by the mafia.
The word on the street is he's got one more fight in Bellator. Do you think they do the Sonnen fight?
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
It's the best return on value for everybody. Yeah.
Maybe they should do Bobby Lashley. I just want to see that fight for it's so weird.
That'd be fun, but I'd do Sonnen because it would also be weird. It'd probably be more competitive, and I don't know. Bobby Lashley's just weird. There's something about that dude where I don't feel like he's a badass. Like, no. I actually think that you and I have more street cred than Bobby Lashley, which is sad, but like, you know, if somebody just saw like a picture of our faces and his face, they'd be like, oh, yeah, those two white boys, they're way more fucked up than he is.
Maybe. He does have weird ears. Prior to that, Brent Primus defeated Michael Chandler by TKO, doctor stoppage at 222 in the first round. Huge upset here. Chandler's like a perennial Bellator lightweight champion, number one, number two contender for the last, you know, I want to say like 5 years. Really good guy, somebody you think who would be top 10-ish in the UFC.
I think this is the fourth title fight that Chandler has lost.
I'd have to look back, but yeah, he's always been in the mix in Bellator, whether it was with Eddie Alvarez or who's the other guy who jumped to UFC? Fuck, I can't think of his name. Anyway, big upset here. Nobody really gave Primus a chance at all. It seemed like they were just trying to get Chandler on this card and put Primus in there because he was available. Weird fight, though. There was quite a few leg kicks that Primus landed early, and something went wrong with Chandler's ankle. I don't know if he broke it, sprained it, or whatever, but he kept rolling his ankle in, like, this nasty manner. It was flopping around. He couldn't put any weight on it. He still landed a couple good shots and was trying to hang in there, but, like, literally it was, like, flopping around. It was almost like the bone in the ankle dislocated or broke, and it was like skin holding it on at certain points, it looked like. So the ref like does an injury timeout, which you can't really do because it was not an illegal blow. The ref botched the call. If anything, he should have just ended the fight, and I would have been okay with that because Chandler couldn't walk. So he calls it off. He stops the fight, calls a timeout. The New York State Athletic Commission doctor comes in and looks at him. And Chandler gets up, says he can fight, and then he goes to sit back down on the stool, and somebody pulls the stool out from under him. He lands on his ass. Then the ref stops the fight. It was a really weird scene. Afterwards, Chandler was pissed. He jumped up and down on his foot, said it was fine. He claimed it was some sort of calf cramp, and it had cleared up by the time he was ready for his post-fight interview and claimed he was fine. Primus said he wanted to do a rematch, but a really weird scene, kind of gross and gruesome if you were just watching his ankle. Weird fight, but it kind of summed up the whole night for Bellator with these weird finishes.
Yeah, I mean, it was a shit fest. It was embarrassing, you know. It was probably the best fight on the pay-per-view, you know, just because Chandler is, yeah, I think a real top 15 world-class fighter, a dude that could go into the UFC today and compete. And, right. You know, it was a fluke. His ankle rolled. Something happened to it. I don't buy the whole calf cramping thing because I've actually had a lot of I've had like a weird like history of calf cramps. Like I just wake up sometimes. I've had my calves cramp all the time, and it's one of those things where when it happens, your ankle does not go limp from it. It's just a weird thing. Like it doesn't happen. It hurts, but usually you kind of massage it out, and about after like 30 seconds, it's okay. I don't know what happened. It was unfortunate. It was a bullshit. I don't want to say a bullshit. It was a bullshit win. I don't think Primus, Optimus Prime, whatever you want to call his name, actually really won the fight. But, you know, such is life, and it's New York, and they're the new Texas, kind of, as far as fucked up things that they do. They'll have a rematch in a couple months, probably, and Chandler will probably win. And Walt just kind of laughed at that time when, 37 people paid $50 to watch this fight.
I was entertained, although I didn't pay for it. Zach Freeman defeated Aaron Pico by guillotine choke at 24 seconds in the first round. This one was shorter than the Fedor fight and the Chandler fight. Only 24 seconds for Aaron Pico. Pico, we talked about last week, was this much heralded amateur wrestler, was 19 years old, almost made the Olympic team, best high school wrestler ever from California, like won states as a freshman. A lot of hype behind him, trained at AKA, had Crazy Bob Cook in his corner. I think, what the hell's his name? I'm having a hard time with names tonight. Joe Rogan's jiu-jitsu guy, Eddie Bravo was training him. He was really had a lot of hype going into this fight. It was his first pro fight. He was 0-0. He was fighting this guy, Zach Freeman, who was 8-2. It was like, I don't know if he was an RFA champion or number one contender, but he was a fairly legit dude, but nobody had ever heard of him. He had never been on a big stage. This was set up for Pico to win. And I think last week you commented that you thought Pico was being overhyped. And I said this matchup didn't make a lot of sense for him to fight a guy with 10 pro fights and a decent guy, a mid-level pro, didn't make a lot of sense in your first fight. And I think both of our concerns came to fruition here as Pico got dropped with an uppercut and then choked out in 24 seconds. Probably the most disastrous way for Pico to lose, obviously.
Yeah, watching it, I mean, I laughed because of all the autistics in San Jose who love the guy who looks stupid now. But it's kind of I think it's a wake-up call for a lot of people who followed the sport for a long time in that this is a real sport now. You can't just be this really good guy at one thing and come in like you could, 15 years ago. Look at Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo is Aaron Pico plus some. He was 20 years old winning a gold medal in the Olympics, or 21. Like, he was everything Aaron Pico could ever dream of being, and he still fought on the indie circuit for, four or five fights, had trouble with weight and all this stuff. Like, he still had to go through that because there's something to be said for fighting a human being. This is not 1999 when a great wrestler could come in there and, just take down people who probably had a little more knowledge than I do right now and, ground and pound them. You're in there with real dudes, and, even then, what happened doesn't matter. He got hit by like a punch in the first 5 or 10 seconds and caught in a guillotine. Any fight that ends in 20 seconds doesn't mean shit. That's just the reality of the world. Anybody can get caught. That's MMA. We've all seen it so many. Like, how many amazing world-class fighters have we seen lose in the first round, in the first minute of a fight? It happens all the time. Anderson Silva made a career out of doing that to people. That's, Vitor Belfort's entire legacy is built on demolishing people. MMA is different, so, Pico, he should have won. That he didn't is a knock against him. I think it's a knock against his management and Bellator as far as putting him in there with somebody that they, it's probably like a guy that could be in Bellator, or at least on their undercard.
Right.
And they thought, this is... They bought into their own hype, and he's just not there yet, and that's fine. Wait till he comes along for a long time. It's like, when Nick Diaz debuted, he was like 18, 19 years old. He had a couple of fights in the indie circuit in California, made to the UFC, and he did you know, he's a 50-50 fighter for a long time. And that was, again, 15 years ago. These guys need to be brought along almost in a boxing manner where you got to learn how to fight. You know, being a fighter is different than being an athlete. Getting in there and just punching a human being for real and knowing it all counts, that's a scary proposition. So, you know, I wouldn't have debuted him on their first, their second big pay-per-view in Madison Square Garden, all this shit. I know why they did. It made sense. Like, oh, this would be your big star, and we can, like, tell the tale of Aaron Pico debuted in Madison Square Garden, then he became world champion in 3 years and all that shit. But this is the real world. It's not a fucking, you know, Aesop's Fables or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Coker was talking. I watched an interview with him, and he was saying Pico's management wanted an even tougher fight, like a ranked guy in his debut, and Coker had to talk them down a little bit to this guy Freeman, who ended up, you don't want to say destroying Pico, but rocking him and choking him out almost immediately. Granted, there's lucky shots and stuff happens in MMA all the time, and if they fought again, who knows what the result would be. But Coker, like, had to convince them to take a guy at Freeman's level. So it was interesting. He was probably not getting the best guidance. Or maybe he's one of those guys in the gym who's unbelievable and beating everybody up, and he can hang with Khabib or something, and they knew something, and this guy just hit a lucky shot. I don't know. Obviously, we got to see him fight, you know, a half dozen more times to really have a feel for it. But it was interesting because Bellator also has these great standout wrestlers, you know, in Tyrell Fortune and Ed Ruth, who they've brought along slowly. Both of those guys are 3-0 and fighting guys who are 0-1, 1-1, that sort of thing. So I don't know what it was about Pico and why they thought he'd be a guy to treat differently than these other guys who they're trying to kind of put through their own sort of farm system to bring him up.
Yeah, I think it's, again, I just come back to the fact that this is a fight. This is not sport. And we've seen, like, sporting-wise, there are these phenoms who are these teenage guys like Bryce Harper. You know, 15, 16 years old, he's on Sports Illustrated. Everybody knew Bryce Harper would be a big deal. He got drafted number one overall and went to the Nationals, destroyed the minor leagues, came up to the bigs really young. He's done pretty well, had a, you know, at least one season where he, you know, won the MVP, a fucking, you know, surefire prospect. But all he's ever doing is still playing baseball. And I think in MMA, people look at all these great skills somebody has. And, you know, Aaron Pico undeniably has a ton of skill, everything you could ever want out of a fighter, but I don't know if he's Donald Cerrone, and Donald Cerrone has that thing in him where I'm gonna fuck you out there and fight, man. Like, I don't know if somebody says, hey, dickhead, at a bar, if Aaron Pico would say fuck you and throw down, but Donald Cerrone would. And, you know, and this is a cage fight, and there is a point in every fight where you gotta just say, you know, fuck you, I'm going to bite this mouth guard, and I'm going to punch you in the face. But again, in 20 seconds, who knows what happened? You know, shit happens in MMA.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they push him and promote him from here, if they give him easier fights, or if they come back and say, we want somebody just as tough again, that was a fluke, he's great. And it'll be interesting to see where they go from here with him. The opener of the pay-per-view featured another title fight, and we actually had Douglas Lima defending his welterweight title by defeating Lorenz Larkin by unanimous decision. Kind of weird scorecards here. There was 248-47 scores and 150-45. So one judge gave all five rounds to Lima. Personally, I kind of felt like Larkin was doing a little more in the first couple of rounds, and then Lima came on in the last couple. But this fight wasn't anything special. Nothing really exciting happened. But a good win for Lima, and I don't know what you do with Larkin now, because he was kind of supposed to come in and kind of win the title in his first fight, which he didn't do. So that's a couple steps back for him, and probably Lima will defend against Rory McDonald next.
If he doesn't, there's a gigantic failure. because that's the only fucking dude at 170 they got that no one gives a shit about. So make it happen, Bellator. Let's do it.
Okay. Then on the Spike TV prelims, Ryan Bader defeated Phil Davis to become the Bellator light heavyweight champion of the world. It was a split decision win. Again, kind of funky scorecards here. 49-46 for two of them, and then 47-48 on the third card. So one judge gave it to Davis. Another had Bader win in 4-1. Again, a dull fight, kind of like their previous fight, not much going on. You know, it's that wrestle box style. There's a couple takedowns here or there. Just not really throwing combos, a punch here or there. Not much to write home about.
Yeah, I wish I had something clever or funny to say, but this fight was a piece of shit, so fuck them both.
That was clever. We also had James Gallagher defeating Chinzo Machida, which is, I think, Lyoto's older brother, yes. Although he's much smaller. It's rough when your little brother can beat you up. Anyway, Gallagher looked great. He won by submission, rear naked choke, got a takedown, and choked him out in 222 of the first. You can't really say it's a star-making performance because it's on the Bellator 180 prelims. And I mean, some people saw it. I mean, there were 900,000 viewers, like we said, but Gallagher looks good for a kid who's 20 years old, and granted, Machida's 40. He's still proven to be kind of a tricky fighter. I think he's like 6-2 and has had some success in Bellator. So it wasn't like a joke fight for Gallagher. But definitely a good win, kind of decent promo afterwards. Considering he's 20 years old, he's got that SBG camp behind him and Conor McGregor behind him. Looks like I don't want to say sky's the limit because he's so young, but there's definitely some potential there for Gallagher to become a star in MMA.
Yeah, I thought that maybe of everybody on the show, he was the one that stood out the most. He got the decisive victory, had a good promo, and let's face it, Conor McGregor's star is so bright that if you're in that orbit, you're going to shine like a diamond, and that's exactly what happened here. So good for Gallagher.
Then on Sunday night, June 25th, we had a UFC card from Oklahoma City. This was on FS1. And FS2, which is always fun. In the main event, Kevin Lee defeated Michael Don't Talk About My Mom Chiesa by submission. This was a rear naked choke at 4:37 of the first round. I like this fight while it lasted. There was some good grappling on the ground. Chiesa was going for some arm bars and some different stuff. It was competitive. But eventually, Lee kind of just overpowered Chiesa from what I could tell, took the back and sunk in a rear naked choke. There was a lot of controversy around the finish. Chiesa was hand fighting for a while, but stopped and appeared to be going out, and Mario Yamasaki immediately stopped the fight. Like, it was quick, but I don't think Chiesa was getting out. And it looked like he was about to go out. His hands just dropped. But after it was stopped, Chiesa sprung right up, started protesting the finish. And, I mean, Yamasaki took a lot of heat from fans, from Dana White, Chiesa himself. Dana White made fun of him for doing the heart hand thing he does before every fight and said he looks like a 12-year-old girl and basically buried him. To me, it was a little early. I would have liked to see it go another, like, literally 1 second. To see if Chiesa was truly out, but at the same time, he wasn't getting out of that rear naked choke.
Yeah, my initial impression when I watched it was, okay, he's out. Because Lee, he had the... Lee? Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah. Kevin Lee.
Kevin Lee. I thought I was right. He had the choke in. It was under the chin. It was deep under the chin. He'd been doing it for a bit. Chiesa kind of fought it for a while, but his hands pulled away from the choke, and he stops fighting it. Now, that does not mean that he's out. There is a point when you're being choked from with a rear naked choke where you can kind of breathe and almost like regain your senses that way, but you're in a cage fight. You're not fighting what's actually happening to you. Like, you're not grabbing the arm that's choking you to death. And, you know, if Chiesa had not immediately stood up and said, "I'm okay," I wouldn't have any problem with it. The fact that he did so quickly does tell me that he was not out, because I've been choked out a lot. And when you get choked out, like, the first, when you wake up, you go, "What the fuck's happening?" You have this weird, like, sensation of, "Where am I? What's going on?" And you're not as lucid as Chiesa was. So I don't think he was choked out, but don't give the ref any chance to let that happen. Fucking over 14 years ago, makes me sound old, I was in a fight in a cage in Indiana. The dude had my back. He trying to get a choke. I was blocking it, and I remember specifically thinking, the referee might think I'm being choked out, and I gave a thumbs up. I was aware of what was happening. Chiesa should have been aware as well. That he wasn't is on him. And I don't blame Yamazaki for this stoppage. I think, you know, dude was getting choked. It was decisively under the chin. And, yeah, I mean, sucks to suck, but you got choked, dude. And good for Lee for, you know, being a baller, because this fight was awesome for a while there. Like,
that was fun.
Yeah, they, both guys went back and forth, and all of a sudden I'm watching him going, holy shit, Kevin Lee's got his back, he's got that choke in. Like, that's impressive against a guy like Chiesa, who I would, you know, generally classify as a very technical fighter. So for Lee to do that, all the respect in the world to the Motown phenom.
Yeah, he's now 9-2 in the UFC with 5 straight wins, 3 of them by rear naked choke. So there you go. He's got a good... You do not want that man on your back, by the sounds of things. It's actually his...
And maybe you do.
Depending what you're into. But, I mean, that's his 4th rear naked choke win in the UFC. There's not a lot of guys with 4 wins by rear naked choke in the UFC.
Luke Thomas wants it.
Okay. Know what that means.
He likes to be choked. We've seen the videos.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Okay, now I get it. Yes, that is true. I will not imitate him right now. He didn't almost go out, but he was changing colors. That was different. But that's dedication there. That's showing people what you're into, I guess. So Lee is looking for a fight with Khabib next, which is odd because nobody ever really wants to fight Khabib. So that's it. He wants to fight Khabib in Detroit, which is his hometown. So, I mean, good on Lee for calling Khabib out of... I mean, there's other guys he could call out that might be easier wins who are ranked, like Edson Barboza. I think most guys would rather fight Tony Ferguson than they'd want to fight Khabib, but... interesting that he's got the balls to do that. I don't think he's going to get that fight, but good on him for doing it.
You know, if you're the UFC, if you're not going to do Ferguson and Khabib, this fight makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, Lee, I'm a fan of his all of a sudden. I think he's got something. He's got a personality. He's got some charisma. You know, he's got the balls to call out the Destroyer of Worlds. Go for it.
Obviously, Chiesa wants to run it back. Would you... obviously, you didn't think it was that controversial of a stoppage, right?
No, but I would still do a rematch.
You would?
Just because there's enough controversy amongst the general public, and what I think doesn't matter when it comes right. to booking things, even though I'm eating cookies. So, yeah, I'd do a rematch.
What kind of cookies are you eating?
Those ones are like, they have a hole, like a hole in the center, and like fudge dripping on the top of it.
Like the EL fudge? Like
yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah.
The ones with the little elf on them?
Yeah, except for these are like the mini ones you get for a buck in the supermarket line when you're checking out.
I
bought the thing of them, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I hate it myself.
We know. Let's keep moving along here. In the semi-main event, Tim Bosch defeated Johnny Hendricks by TKO. It was a head kick and punches that did good old Big Rig in at 46 seconds of the second round. This fight also had a bit of a backstory. Hendricks, forever fought at welterweight but struggled to make weight. There's been, you know, four or five instances where he had a rough time getting down to 170. So he moved up to 185 for his last fight. And then managed to miss weight again at 185, though. He weighed in at 188 for this, so he was fined. I think, like, the percentage of his purse ended up coming out to, like, 40 grand. He lost 40 grand because he couldn't make 185 pounds. He claimed he was sick prior during the week coming into the fight. But I don't know how he does not make 185. If anything, a guy his size with his frame would typically fight at 155. How he misses 185 is just kind of sad.
It's funny when you say that. All I can think of when I saw the news was Matt and I have always talked about how he should be 155, and this fat fuck can't make 185.
It's bizarre. It's really, really bizarre. As far as the fight went, the first round was competitive, I thought. But Hendricks just looks old, and he doesn't really seem motivated anymore. I feel like when Tim Bosch is the more active fighter, you're probably doing something wrong. And in the second, Bosch just landed a big head kick, then finished it off with punches. Bosch was just too big, too strong for Hendricks, kind of like what we thought. I mean, Bosch used to fight at 205. He's called the Barbarian. He's a strong, heavy-hitting middleweight who knocks guys out, and he did just that. My big takeaway from this, I was thinking about, like, if you had to pick any middleweight in the UFC that Bosch could get his leg up to and head kick, it could only be Johnny Hendricks because he's like 5'8".
Hector Lombard.
Maybe Hector Lombard, too. Yeah. But, like, do you ever picture, like, Tim Bosch finishing a fight with a head kick?
Fuck no.
He's not Donald Cerrone. It was, like, the perfect guy for him to try and head kick. He's 6 inches shorter than every other middleweight.
This was, it was sad. I think if Hendricks had been, like, in his...
Like, Hendricks should have been on that Bellator card the way he looked.
He was getting his ass whipped in Bellator, too, these days. And it's weird because a lot of athletes hang on well past their expiration date, and I get it, because that's the nature of the beast where you've been this god since you were 15 years old, all you've ever been is a superstar, quarterback, first baseman, center, whatever it is, and you feel so awesome doing it, and you can still kind of play the game you're accustomed to. You know, if you play, baseball, you can go out there and kind of swing the bat for a little bit, and maybe you don't hit 400 or 300, but even if you hit 200, it's like, it's better than a lot of these young dudes who kind of suck. But this is fighting. Like, I don't understand the urge to hang on for a payday when you're fighting. It's just weird that Hendricks would go in there and clearly half-ass it when you're fighting a human being inside of a cage. Like, just to me, the idea that you're gonna, you know, throw down leather and clash with somebody in a battle of wills or whatever you want to call it, all the drama and melodrama and the histrionics that we've heard over the years, but that's all real. Like, all the shit people write about fighting and gladiators and all this stuff, we kind of get accustomed to it, but when you're actually in there, that's real shit. And to not want to give everything to it, and Hendrick clearly is not giving everything to it, that's befuddling to me. So, good for you, Tim Boach. And Hendricks, I would say enjoy your restaurant, but you don't even have that anymore. So, I don't know what you do. I guess coach some wrestling and find the nearest Old Country Buffet.
I mean, Hendricks is 3-6 in his last 9. It's been a rough run for a guy who was the best welterweight in the world. Since the GSP loss, he has gone 3-6. Not a good run. He can't make weight. He doesn't look like he cares. Remember that weird interview he did with Helwani too, trying to challenge him to cut weight? He's a mess. He's got issues. So it kind of a sad story there.
Fuck you, Johnny Hendricks.
Yeah, that was a shitty fight for Johnny Hendricks. Speaking of shitty, Felice Herrig defeated Justine Kish.
You bastard.
by unanimous decision, 30-26, 30-26, and 29-27. Herrig just was the more experienced, I think, better fighter pretty much everywhere. She kind of just had the edge on the ground and usually had the better position. Kish was competitive. It wasn't like a blowout or anything. But I don't think there was any question who should have won this fight. The most talked about aspect of the fight was Kish actually, I don't know what exactly happened, whether you would call it pooping, sharding, or diarrhea'd, but brown liquid solid
shitting. Sure,
yeah. But we say poop around here with the kids. But
in the room?
No, but that's just how I talk now. It's like more reflexive than anything else. That's okay. It means the same thing. You just don't want your kids like saying, "Oh, I got to take a shit" with like people over the house. You know what I mean? It's not the best look.
Actually, but yeah.
Well, think about it. You see a little 4-year-old say, "Hey, Dad, I got to take a shit." It's not a
good
look.
But that's what adults say.
They do, but I don't know. There's like a
way. Why do kids have to be different? Like, if you and I would say, "Hey, if I'm like at your house, I'm like, dude, I got to take a shit," you'd be like, "Oh, go down the hall to the left." If your kid says, "I got to take a shit," be like, "Why did you say that, Coop? That's really awful." Like, you know, whatever. Like, if Coop wants to say shit, let him say shit.
I'm not that uptight about it, but it's more other people that care.
I get it. Yeah.
No, she doesn't really care that deep much either. She's pretty laid back in that regard. No, just like if you're out in public, you don't want your kid saying bitch and fuck and stuff. It's just you look like, I don't know, white trash, or you don't pay attention to your kids or care what they do or say.
You have no idea what the rest of the world is like. I was in fucking Hong Kong. And all the time,
I have some idea what the rest of the world is like,
no,
but go ahead.
When I was
tell me about the one time you went to Hong Kong.
I've been there multiple times, actually.
I'm joking. You're
but,
uptight.
You son of a bitch. When I was there, one of the things that was a crazy constant was all the Chinese kids that came down from Guangzhou, they would just shit and piss on the street. Because nobody taught them different. I remember when the 2008 Olympics were there in Beijing, the Chinese government actually had to host like seminars to tell all their citizens, do not spit when you're in line, because it was so common. So I guess what I'm really saying is you're doing a good job with your kids.
Well, a lot of it's cultural, too, but
anyway. That culture of not shitting in public on the street, yeah, what a culture that is.
Dude, 200 years ago in Europe, they would shit in a pot and dump it out on the road.
That's better than pulling your trousers down and just shit in front of other people.
That's just society saying that's not okay. Anyway, let's get back to talking shit. So I think it happened when Kish, like, Harry had it, speaking of rear naked chokes, but she had her in a rear naked choke, Kish in a rear naked choke, and whatever happened, either she squeezed out a fart and sharted, but there's a lot of, like, diarrhea all over the cage. This wasn't, like, solid turds. This was, like, liquid shits, like, all over the cage, like, puddles of it.
Would it be better if it was a solid turd?
I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. But that's
Caddish.
That's why
fucking Caddish like turd.
I'm not sure. But either way, there's like puddles of fecal matter on the cage. And then like later on, it was the same spot where Chiesa and Lee had the finish to their fight. It's so, like Chiesa got like sort of choked out and like Justine Kish's shit. It was something else to see. Anyway, she made a joke out of it on Twitter. It got a lot of likes and retweets, and I forget what her actual phraseology was. Like, she doesn't give a shit.
Shit happens.
Shit happens, right. So she made a joke out of it, and she's now more famous in this loss and shitting in the cage than she ever was before, so good for her. Herrig obviously got the win. After the fight, though, she complained that she doesn't get much of a push from the UFC because she isn't young enough or beautiful enough. Do you think she has a legit gripe?
No.
No, you think she's just not a very good fighter?
For fuck's sake, like 2 weeks ago, Herrig was out there with some, I'm going to weigh and see what my weight is, and oops, I dropped the towel, and then it blurred up the screen. Like, your entire career has been based around the fact that you're attractive. Which is fine. We all have to do what we got to do. She should be in the UFC. She's a decent enough fighter. But come on, Harry. Like, if you were, I don't know, ugly as shit and kind of chubby, you wouldn't be where you are. So, she's clearly marketed herself over the years with her sex appeal. And I don't blame her. If I was her, I would do the same. I've tried to do the same. No one will buy it. I have all the negatives that anyone wants to buy them. But don't give me this, they don't want to push me because I'm too pretty or I'm not pretty enough or whatever. Like, shut up. Like, you've had some bad losses. And you beat Justine Kish? Ms. Kish. I don't know if she's married. And that's fine. You're a good fighter, but you're not elite, and that's saying something because women's MMA doesn't have a lot of elite fighters. I hope you make all the money you can and save it all, because you ain't going anywhere in the long run.
Prior to that, we had a couple fights no one cares about. Dominic Reyes defeated Joaquin
Christensen. That was actually kind of a big deal because Reyes is, according to the broadcast, a prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I'm just saying it's a name no one knows. It was a quick win. He blitzed him and knocked him out. Yeah. But, again, it's early on. He's 7-0. It's his first fight in the UFC. But we'll see where he goes. He's definitely a prospect. But in the scheme of things, we don't need to really break that one down. Tim Means defeated Alex Garcia. No one cares. In the opener, Dennis Seaver defeated BJ Penn by majority decision, 28-28, 29-28, and 29-27. Honestly, in the first round, BJ looked better than I thought he would. I thought it was actually kind of competitive in the first round. He was on his feet, kind of moving around, he was on his toes, and it looked decent. It was competitive. In the second round, he actually landed a knockdown. He landed like a couple punches in the round, and one of them knocked Seaver down. Okay. In the third, he was just a punching bag and just took shot after shot after shot and barely threw back. He definitely lost the fight. It was sad because, I mean, Dennis Seaver isn't really even UFC level anymore, I would say. He's not going to be competitive with good guys anymore. He's also 37 or 38, same age as BJ, and he was never anywhere BJ's level in his prime. So, I mean, it kind of was what I thought it was, but at least BJ didn't get finished, I guess. I kind of thought BJ would just get finished and lose that badly. So in one way, I don't even know if you would call it a moral victory because he didn't lose or what you expected BJ to do in this fight. But he should have retired after that third Edgar fight, and he just keeps going on and on.
He should have retired before that fight. But, yeah, I mean,
he did retire before that fight, and then he came back, I guess. But
well,
whatever.
He's a wrestling fan at heart, I guess. It was sad. I actually think a draw was appropriate for this fight because the first round was nothing. Second round was clearly BJ. Third round was clearly Seaver. It was one of those things where I was judging it more on what does BJ have to offer because I know what Seaver is, as opposed to if these were two anonymous dudes fighting. And in that sense, it's just the continual sad slide of BJ Penn into irrelevance. And I hope people don't focus too much on this, and they instead remember the dude that was a fucking god in the cage at one point.
Yeah, for me, it's hard, man. It's like, it taints it. You know what I mean? It's just like, know when to say when and get out of there. It's like, he's bad now. Like, he should not even be in the UFC fighting at all. And it's like, every time he does it, he looks worse and worse. They give him lesser and lesser guys, and he still gets his ass kicked. It's like, dude,
yeah,
just give it. He's got to know. He's now lost 5 in a row, you know? And it's just like, and the fight before that was a draw. It's like, just give it up, man. What are you doing? And at a certain point, it becomes...
Wait, that's not right.
He's lost 5 in a row. Diaz, McDonald, Edgar, Yair, and Seaver.
And before that was...
Fitch. The Fitch
drop. No, Hughes, part 3 was after Fitch.
No, it was before it. It was UFC 123. It was the Hughes win. That was in 2010. Then he fought Fitch in February of 2011.
No, Hughes, the one in Detroit.
I'm looking at it.
Wow, that really sucks for BJ.
And before that, he had the two losses to Edgar. It's like...
No, that can't be right. There's no way in fucking hell. I swear the fucking...
I'm looking at it.
No.
I promise.
It has to...
Either way, BJ should retire. He should have retired years ago. Yeah. It's fucking horseshit. And it's like, it's just sad. And to me, it's lame that the UFC keeps booking him. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, years ago, they wouldn't let Liddell fight anymore, or Hughes, and they tried to push Griffin to retire. It's like, I don't get it. I don't. And if they're concerned he's going to go to Bellator or something, I don't know what they're thinking. But please stop booking him.
Holy fuck, that Hughes fight was before Fitch.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Oh, BJ. You son of a bitch. Just give it up.
Yeah, it's not good. He's 16-12-2 now. You know what I mean? It's just like you look at that record and it's just lame. Before 2010, yeah, you could say this guy's unbelievable, amazing, but... The last fucking 7 years have not been good to him. He is 1-6-1.
BJ, a kid born on the day that you won your last fight would be in first grade. Give it up.
Yes, agreed. I hired a kid at the restaurant that was born 2 months before 9/11. Anyway.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, think about that. I was like... You were born in 2001? I was like, holy shit, what's going on here?
You can hire people that young?
So, yeah, I mean, he's 16, yeah. 16-year-olds have jobs sometimes.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, it happens. Teenagers work occasionally. Anyway, on the prelims, who cares? Clay Guida looked good over Eric Cole.
The second fight on the undercard of Fox Fight Pass was good. I remember that.
Second fight, Tony Martin, Johnny Case.
Yeah, that was really good. Like, in my memory, Case came out kind of aggressive, Dominic Cruz style. But these two had like real bad blood, and they talked about this shit. There was a point where Martin started to bullhead. He's like, "Fuck you, motherfucker, let's go." It was a really good fight. Otherwise, everything else sucked.
What one person I would like to point out: Daryl Horcher defeating Devin Powell. Horcher was the guy who came in short notice and fought Khabib, which most human beings wouldn't do about, I want to say, like 13 months ago. Then he got in a bad motorcycle crash, like tore both his ACL, lacerated his kidney. This was his first fight back. Came back, won the fight, so good for him. Moving along, we'll get into a little news here. Did you see that the California State Athletic Commission will not allow Henan Barrow to fight at 135 pounds?
I did, actually, and,
do you like that?
I...
Or should the government stay over our goddamn business?
You fucker. That's exact... I waffle in that...
Me too. We always waffle in the opposite directions. But
I think that like what they're doing is, in the long run, bad, but in the short run, good. I don't like I don't like people that don't have a financial interest in things making decisions, because sometimes their decisions can be kind of self-serving. I think that Foster and the California Athletic Commission are doing the right thing here. What they basically said was, you missed 135 last time. We're going to make you do it 140. If you make this, we'll make you go down to 135. That's fine. Right now, here in this here now, this moment, this one instance, I don't have a problem with it. In the long run, I don't want to see athletic commissions making these kind of decisions, because then they are, dictating, matches. They're basically matchmakers, and that isn't fair to promotions. I really think that at the end of the day, though, if the UFC signs a guy to serve 135, if one guy can't make it, I think the commission's obligation is to say, this is the weight limit. If you cannot make, in this case, 136 pounds, we will not sanction this fight, even if you're 1 pound over. Mm. And then you tell everybody involved, all three participants, fighter A, fighter B in the promotion, we will not do it. And if it does not happen, then you say, this is the rule, we won't, nothing else. When you start saying, as a government, well, you can't do this, we'll license you at 140, then you're playing matchmaker. So I would actually prefer for the commission to say, do this or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, too, because California had that 10-point plan we talked about a while back where they check them, like, after the weigh-in, the day of the fight, to see how much more weight they've gained back. So Barral could still fuck this up, even if he makes 140, by weighing too much the following day. And the fight could get canceled that way as well. To a degree, I kind of like it because California was also the state where he, like, fell in the tub and was dehydrated and couldn't make weight, and the fight was canceled. I think that was the Dillashaw fight where Joe Soto moved in or something, yep, if memory serves me.
2 years
and
ago.
Yeah, and that happened in California. So in a way, it's like California's already dealt with Barao and seen him have issues making 135, and they're saying, you know what, we don't want to take that risk on our watch. To a degree, I'm okay with that because, again, we talk about it all the time, and it goes back to, like, BJ Penn to a degree. Sometimes the fighters don't make the best choices for themselves. And Barao, after he's been fighting at, I think, 145 his last few fights, yeah, he had the Felipe Nover fight, Jeremy Stevens. So his last two fights were at 145. He went 1-1, and now he wants to go back down to 35. It's like, you have a hard time making 35, dude, and I don't want to say you almost died in our state on our watch the last time you tried to do it, but, I mean, that's essentially what happened.
Yeah, I understand it. I just think that the role of the government is essentially, the law says we govern this weight class, that weight class, and,
right,
and so on, and if you want to compete in this weight class, I think that California is within their rights to say, if you want to fight 135, you have to weigh in at 135 or 136, and then we will monitor you for the next 24 hours. You cannot go above a certain weight, you know, when you rehydrate. To me, that's fair. But when they say in advance, we do not think you can make this weight, we will only allow you to fight at this artificial weight, not a weight that anybody involved, not the fighter opponent or the promoter wants to fight at, then they cross over. And so to me, I would just say, California, put your rules in place, make them as incredibly strict as possible. I would support the shit out of them being strict. I would say, make guys weigh in exactly at the limit, do the water test where they can only have so much water dehydrated from themselves. I would test them the next day. If you want to do, same-day weigh-ins and saying you can only be 20% over, good for you. Go for it. That'd be great. But don't get in the way and say, this guy failed at one point, we won't make it again.
Mm.
That's outside of your realm.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Foster is the director of the California State Athletic Commission, said the commission can't get caught up on things like if it leads to a title or it messes something up in the division. That's not our thing. We have to focus on if it's a safe fight and if the fight is reasonable at this weight class. It has led to some good trash talk back and forth between Barao and Sterling and Aljamain Sterling, who is Barao's opponent for this fight. Sterling wrote, I don't know if it was Twitter or whatever, Instagram, but he wrote, looks like the commission is making the weight cut easier for Barao. Bantamweight, featherweight, or catchweight, it doesn't matter to me. Either way, the commission isn't going to stop me from putting this guy on his back and dropping some elbows on his face. Let's see who wants this shit more. You had your time. So Sterling's fine with it, and Barao gave him some shit back, saying it wasn't his decision, it was the commission's decision. He'd fight him at 135, but the commission won't let him. So it's actually adding a little intrigue to this fight that nobody cared about beforehand. So there you go.
Neil, it's a good fight, so I'll watch it.
Yeah. Yep.
That's UFC 214, right?
That is UFC 214.
A big show. Just had a new fight announced.
Well, there's a lot going on with UFC 214. Let's talk about that now. The Lady Cyborg, Megan Anderson, you can't say inaugural women's featherweight title. What would this be? Because neither of them are champion now. The previous champion was stripped. I don't know what name you would call this, but we're going to crown...
Biannual women's champion?
But that's every 2 years. I don't know what this is.
Biannual can also be every 6 months. It's one of those weird things, like bi can be every, you know, twice a year or every 2 years. It's a fucked up thing, yeah.
Okay. Either way, Cyborg and Megan Anderson is off UFC 214. Anderson pulled out of the fight due to what she called pressing personal reasons that are out of her control. Gave no details. Obviously, people speculate. Some people say she's going to fail a USADA test soon. I have no idea, but that's a rumor that's out there. Either way, she's out. So Invicta bantamweight champion, now that's at 135 pounds, Chania Evinger is going to move up on short notice to fight Cyborg. What are your thoughts on another layer to this mess of the women's featherweight division? Now we've got somebody pulling out, which Anderson pulling out from the biggest fight of her career on short notice is odd. And then on top of it, you're going to put Chania Evinger in to replace her. And Evinger fights at 135, and personally, I think she's a small 135. I think she can make 125 watching several of her fights over the years. She's probably going to get killed by Cyborg, right?
You're goading me, right?
No.
Oh, you know what I'm going to say about this bullshit.
Let's go.
This is a fucking joke. Fucking...
Which part? Anderson, like, what do you think... What do you think of somebody saying, I have pressing personal reasons that are out of my control, I can't fight? Like, do you need to give details? Should you make up an excuse? Or is that good enough?
I will accept that Megan Anderson has something going on. I don't know what it is. Part of this, also, like, because she's a woman, some part of me thinks I'll let it go because... You know, maybe she's pregnant or something. I don't know what it is. Like,
right.
When a dude says it, I'm a little less willing to accept it. But, you know, she already accepted the fight. This isn't Deronda May who's like, I'm not going to fight this bitch because she's a fucking steroid cheat. Megan Anderson said, yeah, I'll do it. And then she said, I can't do it for some personal reasons. And
pregnant would be a good excuse. You should not fight Lady Cyborg if you're pregnant. That would not be a good idea.
Well, Serena Williams won one of the major tournaments for pregnant. But still, yeah. It's, I mean, probably shouldn't fight if you're pregnant or having an abortion soon, which she'll probably do if she's pregnant. That's a really fuck-up thing to say. I'm just kidding, everybody. You know, it's UFC's title fight bullshit. You know, they crown a champion between two chicks who are not in the division, and then one chick says, I won't fight the other chick, who the only chick anyone cares about, and then that chick gets a title fight against somebody else who's also an interim champion for Cyborg's title. Then she became the real champion for Cyborg's title, and then she moved to the UFC to fight for the vacated title, and she pulls out, and so they then bring in Tania Evinger, who is the 135-pound champion in the lesser promotion, who then comes to the UFC, where nobody would actually, you know, give her a chance against Amanda Nunes, let alone giving up at least 10 pounds against Cyborg.
At least.
At least. This is a joke. I mean, it's so weird that they even created... It just goes to show that back in February at UFC, I think it was 211, they were, no, it can't be 211, 207 was 208, UFC, I'll say 208, they were so desperate to have any kind of quote-unquote title fight that they booked Deronda May home, and it was pathetic then. I don't blame Deronda May for not wanting to fight a juice monkey. I also think that... You're women's featherweight. You know who the top dog is. So the whole thing's a fucking joke, and I would be more upset except for the fact that, you know, old UFC 214, pretty fucking stacked card at the top, so I'll watch two women, I'll watch one chick with a clit bigger than my dick beat up another chick. It's good.
I'm assuming you need Cyborg. Also added to UFC 214 today is Tyron Woodley versus Damian Maia for the welterweight title. That was announced literally hours ago. In addition, the word on the street is the winner of that fight will face GSP later in the fall, and that's coming from Dana White. So the winner, Woodley Maia, gets GSP, which leaves Bisping and the middleweight interim title in a weird place. But, hey, that's the UFC in 2017.
I mean, yeah, the fight just got announced. It's, to me, the best fight at 170 pounds.
That was the fight to make.
It was, you know, it's the unquestionable champion versus the unquestioned number one contender. I think it's a... I don't know how the fight will play out. I don't know if it'll be good or not, but this is number one and number two in the world at that weight. If they want to that the winner gets GSP, that's kind of a weird way to put it, because it implies that your champion's not the best. But I don't know. Like,
to me, it makes more sense than the Bisping fight. GSP Bisping. Sure. That fight never made sense. To me, it's like GSP is the greatest welterweight ever. He never lost the belt. He should have come back for the welterweight title to begin with. Like, the Bisping fight never made sense, sporting sense. I get it was more of a money fight. I get that. But at the same time, it was dumb.
It makes sense for GSP, though, because if you're ever going to move up in weight and beat a guy, Bisping is the probably most beatable middleweight champion in a long, maybe in the history of the UFC.
Yeah, Evan Tanner.
Well, he's dead, so that's an easy win. But, you know,
he can't even tap out, though.
True, he could just take a beating and keep on competing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, fuck it. If Bisping beats Yoel Romero, and I say that definitively because Robert Whittaker sucks, if St. Pierre was to beat, we'll say, Tyron Woodley, fuck, that's a fucking mega fight in 2018. It's fucking 2018 we're talking about. What the fuck? I remember growing up as like a kid, and I thought 1995. I thought that was like the coolest year ever. I don't know why. Like, this is a cool year. We're going to be at 2018. We should have flying fucking cars and, like, some sort of, like, drone that just brings me my drinks and food or something like that. I don't know.
It's coming. We're getting there. So UFC 214, like you said, is stacked. So you've got Cormier Jones for the light heavyweight title, Woodley Maia for welterweight, Cyborg Evinger for the women's featherweight title. Then even the undercard's pretty good. Like we said, you've got Sterling and Barao. And you've even got, like, I think they threw Jimmy Manuwa on the undercard just in case something happens with John Jones. He's fighting Voltron Ozdemir. Ricardo Lamas versus Jason Knight should be a fun fight. You've got Super Sage Northcutt and John McDessie. That's a fun card with a lot of good fights and three title fights. So... UFC 14 is looking pretty good. UFC 213, though, isn't looking that great anymore because Donald Cerrone had to pull out of his fight with Robbie Lawler on that show. Cerrone says he's having a super bad infection in his blood, and I believe Dana White said it was actually a staph infection. Cerrone's hoping to be good to go at UFC 214, so it's possible Cerrone and Lawler could be added to that card, but I don't know if you get better from a staph infection that quickly. Cerrone said he was going to be on an IV for a week, which I don't know if that is any kind of USADA issue as well, because they get weird about IVs, but we'll let them sort that out.
Yeah, I just saw something from Dana like an hour ago where he said – that fight's not going to happen at 214.
Yeah, I mean, that card's so loaded. Why would you put that on that show?
Just because Dana loves us all, I guess. I don't know. It's funny because, you know, 213 is their international fight week, their biggest card of the year, yet 214 is so much better.
Right.
And, you know, I think the extra UFC did everything they could for 213. If you look at, like, the undercard, pretty fucking good undercard. Yeah, they got fucked because Cerrone and Lawler was gone. But if you look at that undercard and then you throw on GSP and Bisping, which I think was their original intention, that's a badass fucking card.
Yeah,
you
mean,
you can only do it. You can only work with the, you know, the food that the distributor brought to the chef.
The 213, which is 2 weeks away. You've got Nunez versus Shevchenko. Yoel Romero versus Robert Whittaker for the interim middleweight title, Verdum versus Overeem, and Anthony Pettis versus Jim Miller. So a solid main card, and something will get bumped up, obviously, from the prelims to the main card. But, yeah, solid show. I mean, losing Lawler Cerrone hurts that card a lot because that was a fun fight. It was supposed to happen. Was it at UFC 205 originally? They were talking about that fight. Do you think it'll ever happen? Do you think it's cursed? Do you think it's not meant to be? It's one of those fights we'll never get, or they will eventually get in the cage. What's your hunch?
It does have that aura of being cursed.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
Yeah, it's one of those things where there's no logical reason I think it won't happen, but my God sense, if you will, because I'm God, says it doesn't happen because some almighty force in the universe says you do not deserve something this awesome. And we will all be deprived because we didn't fast during Ramadan. And that's that's on all of us. So, assalamu alaikum, Allahu Akbar. I'm sorry, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Who's been damaged by this women's featherweight debacle in UFC?
Durandame?
Nope. Well, probably.
Holm?
How about Invicta? They have no champ. They have no champions anymore. Yeah. Like Megan Anderson, I guess, is technically a UFC fighter now, even though she hasn't fought for them. So they have no featherweight champion. And they also took their previous featherweight champion in Cyborg. And now Tania Evinger was their bantamweight champion. She's been pulled. It's just like they're getting stripped of these fighters, and then they don't even end up fighting in the UFC, or they just get mauled by Cyborg, one or the other. Just kind of interesting that they're kind of taking all their biggest names and – and they've got nothing to show for it. I think Angela Hill, too. Wasn't Angela Hill the champion?
115, yeah.
Yeah.
Invicta's just ECW to the 1999 WWE.
Maybe. Pretty much. But they're getting hosed on this deal. I don't know how much Fight Pass is paying them, but I don't know. It's hard to get any momentum when you keep having your champions plucked out right from
There's
underneath
no
you.
What fucking momentum do you have, though? Like, it's a bunch of, you know, it's women's MMA in Kansas City. There's
right.
a limit to what they're going to be, and I actually applaud them for, on some level, acknowledging, yeah, we are, we're a feeder system, and, you know, who cares? Like, I watch Invicta because it's a good show top to bottom. Good for them.
Good for them for losing all their best fighters. At UFC 215, we actually have, I don't know if it's going to be it can't be the main event, but we did have a big fight announced today officially. We've got Junior Dos Santos versus Francis Ngannou. That's going to be on September 9th in Edmonton, which is the commission that let Tim Haig get knocked out 5 times in 18 months, but whatever.
Fuck them.
Good luck to JDS. I know we kind of talked about that fight, and to me, Ngannou's got this rep that he's this athletic freak, but he's never fought anybody as good as JDS. This is going to be a big step up in competition for him. But JDS's defense has been kind of porous over the years. He's taken a lot of shots, whether it's against Kane or whoever it might be. Do you like his chances against Ngannou, or is Ngannou just going to walk through this version of JDS in 2017?
Okay, go on.
Okay.
Honestly, it's a good fight because if you're Francis Ngannou, you have to beat Dos Santos if you want to be, you know, the best.
That's right.
What it comes down to is your goal as a fighter is to be the best in the world. It's not to be top 10 or top 5. You want to be the best. And if you can't beat Dos Santos, you cannot be the best. So if he beats Dos Santos, he's a good title challenger. And if he can't, then he fights, you know, Andre Arlovsky or Josh Barnett. That's how life works.
Who do you like in the fight?
I have no idea because Ngannou is just kind of one of those names where he's looked good. I think he's young and has power. Dos Santos, I think, is old and his chin isn't there. But he's also very skilled and knows who he's doing. So, you know, if Ngannou wins, I actually don't think it proves a ton beyond he beat a dude who is washed up. And if he loses, though, I think it says that he will never be... I shouldn't say never. But he has a ways to go before he can be anything special. So give me a couple of weeks, months, years to figure this out when I'm not drunk.
What are you drinking at the moment?
Vodka and Gatorade.
Really?
I've actually not had a drink in about 7 days.
That's a long time.
It's really sad that it is, but Gatorade keeps me hydrated, and I just need something to chase on the vodka. Just let's go on with the show.
What kind of vodka do you buy?
The cheapest shit possible.
Mm.
If you're gonna mix something with Gatorade,
Do not
pay anything at all. Like Top Shelf vodka is a fucking scam unless you're drinking it straight, and even then, you probably won't know. It's like all hard liquors are that way. It's pathetic.
Do you add ice to it?
No.
Is it cold?
The Gatorade is, yeah.
Interesting. Are you excited for the big show this weekend?
What the fuck is this weekend?
Seriously, it's Professional Fighters League 36, Fitch versus Foster.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, I don't care.
Yeah, this will be the former World Series of Fighting. Their first show is Professional Fighters League, which no one still really knows what that means, but they have a show at the Daytona International Speedway in Daytona Beach, Florida, this weekend, June 30th, which would be what? Friday? It's June 30th, Friday?
The 4th is on a Tuesday.
Yeah,
third
Friday.
Is Monday. 2nd is...
It's Friday. Yeah, wow. So, yeah, the main event's John Fitch versus Brian Foster. This show's not going to do well on NBC Sportsnet, I don't think. But it's the only real... Can you call it real? The only semi-real MMA this weekend, so... There you go. Everybody else is off probably because of the 4th of July or something.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out and see what's going on. My DVR has this even set, because that'd be kind of embarrassing if they didn't have it set.
Well, it might not. Do you think there'd be an issue if they changed the name of the company?
Yep, there is, because nothing is set. So suck a dick, Ali Abzi or whatever your name is.
They got rid of him a long time ago.
A long time ago? You mean like one show again?
It was a while.
Oh, I
and then there's new owners now. Ali's out.
Yes, he's record out. All episodes of Professional Fighters League. Like,
what a shitty name, right?
It sounds like a union, doesn't it? Child about this shit. Like, it sounds like something Errol Hawani would be a part of. That fucking hack ass dick.
Did we ever talk about the?
No, we did not.
Association.
Well, we may have, but I black out a lot, so I don't know.
I think that was while you were finding yourself in New Haven. But
don't minimize what I went through. That was a good experience for me.
But your one takeaway was that somebody called you a white supremacist.
That is not my one takeaway.
That okay? Well, you talked about it for 45 minutes.
Well, I fucking also love Mara Altman. All the fucking feminist writers I read, who I thought were just fucking geniuses, who everyone in the world should support, because Mara Altman, Joan Didion are just goddesses in the world who made me look like a piece of shit.
So yeah, there's MMA writers, journalists. I'm doing air quotes while I say that.
No.
Are trying to form some sort of association so they can, you know, stand up to the UFC or whatever. And I don't even know what the purpose of it is, to be honest. But what one of the vice president of the things, Ariel Helwani, who's clearly the most famous MMA guy, MMA journalist, writer, interviewer, whatever you want to call it. And I don't want to say he put, like, MMA interviews on the map, but he kind of did. I mean, he had access to Dana and whatever. He got on the Fox shows, the Fox Sports 1 shows.
When he was paid.
And that's what I'm going to get to. He was taking paychecks directly from Zuffa, like the parent company of the UFC. He was getting paid by the company that he was supposed to be covering, which is obviously a journalism no-no because you can't be unbiased. It's against, you know, the journalism code of ethics and all that. And now all these MMA journalists have made him like the vice president of this association, which to me and anybody who's paying attention has to like take it as a joke, but he's got such a big following and is so powerful within that small niche community that people are like, oh, Ariel's involved. I probably should do this too because he's the biggest name in the game. It's just a weird situation.
I look at it as white collar people who were educated on the idea of blue collar ethics, in that he's a writer, and anybody involved in covering mixed martial arts for a living, you are not entitled to a union. Like, everyone's entitled to a union if you can, like, come together and form it. That's fine. I get it. But unions exist to protect people that are truly fucked. Coal miners or, you know, people on a factory assembly line. People that are one step away from being a robot, I guess. If you want to be a writer or a journalist, that is an endeavor of love. And I say this to somebody who is essentially one step away from being that. You want to write for a living. You want to, you know, ply your trade or whatever. Your value is not concrete. It is esoteric at best. And you are not exploited. And if you are exploited, you don't die from it. You don't have to inhale fumes from you know, factories or coal mines or any of the bullshit that real union people go through. And I fucking look at those people and I think, my gosh, they fucking needed that shit. They needed to come together as individuals and say, we will not do more unless you give us a pay raise. You fucking sit at a computer and you type some shit on a keyboard, and sometimes you get on your microphone and you talk to, you know, quote unquote famous fighters. Fuck off, you assholes. You're not a fucking real union. Real unions are for people that have nothing else to do. They have no other options. You fucking French Canadian fuck. Fuck you, Ariel. You're a fucking glory hound. All you want is everybody to look at you and go, I'm so brave, and I want everybody to love me and say I'm doing a good job. Fuck you, you asshole. Fuck Ariel. Fuck all these people involved in this bullshit. You're a fucking writer. You want to know what real bullshit is? You don't want to know a real job? Go fucking load boxes off of a fucking crate. Go stock shelves. Go out in 110 degree heat and fucking grab, fucking shopping carts because somebody tells you to. Go in the fucking mine when you don't know what the fuck's going to happen. You have to, drill some fucking coal. And if you're lucky, you don't fucking die. Fuck you, you assholes. You fucking privileged little bitches. I hope you all, I hope you die from your carpal tunnel, you assholes.
How many drinks have you had?
Not enough.
Are you like a happy drunk?
I'm actually very loving and happy in life right now.
Oh, good. I'm feeling that. The whole impetus of this thing, of this association, is based on Ariel not getting press credentials. Do you know what I mean? That's what all these people...
He did not get press credentials from Zufa, who was giving him money. What a fucking saint he is. I remember Joan of Arc stood up on behalf of all the French, and then she said in English, hey, King whatever from England, I love you. You're my favorite. You give me all my money. Can I have some more? And then he said no. And she says, well, fuck you. You're a jerk. Fuck off, Ariel.
Okay. Let's move along then.
Don't move along.
I don't have much else to say. Like, I think it's silly that he's involved with it considering his background, but nobody talks about that background and him getting paid by Zufa. And he mentioned it on his show, but it got like swept over because he also talked about getting choked by a security guard who, when he was talking to Chuck Liddell didn't like his question or whatever, so he got choked and he released the Brock Lesnar story. So he's got like this credibility that he's anti-establishment, but he was really getting paid by the company he was covering, but no one ever talks about it. And if like you were paying attention to that whole story and what was going on, that was the most revealing part of the whole thing, was that he was on their payroll for over a year when he was supposed to be this unbiased journalist. It'd be like trying to cover Trump and you work for him. Like, you can't do that.
It is like Kellyanne Conway covering Trump and then saying, I can't believe I got fired.
Right. Yeah.
That's right, Ariel. You're a fucking dumbass blonde airhead.
Let's change gears here. I think we've covered all the MMA this week.
Yes.
We did not have a real USADA story, but I did come across this story today. There's this 14-year-old male cyclist in Italy who tested positive for anabolic steroids. The one he popped for was called Mesterolone. What kind of life are you living if you're 14 and you're taking steroids to ride a bike really fast?
I have always looked at cycling as the ultimate proof that PEDs exist everywhere because of a bunch of assholes in Lycra are doing all kinds of crazy-ass shit to ride a bicycle. What do you think somebody is doing when he gets $20 million a year to hit a baseball? Are you out of your fucking mind? Fucking Lance Armstrong is a one-ball wonder. Shoot himself full of all kinds of shit so he could ride a bicycle. He's riding a bicycle. The fucking act that we all learned when we're like 3 or 4 years old. The great transition from infant to prepubescent whatever. And they're taking all this shit. Like, it's insane. And I think it just says to me, every high-level athlete in the world is on something. And that's just the nature of the beast.
I'm just saying, like, are the parents giving them steroids? Like, where does a 14-year-old start taking, like, that's crazy. Can you imagine, like, telling your kid, take this shit so you can win these bike races? Like, that's some fucked up
shit. I can't imagine. I don't have kids, obviously, thankfully. Praise be to Jesus. Allah Akbar. But I can't imagine giving your kids shit like that, but there are a lot of really fucked up human beings that have kids.
Right.
They really want to live through their children. You probably have begun to see it. You'll see it more and more as you get older. And I know, Edmund Tony has seen a lot of this stuff where these fucking psycho parents, they're just unsatisfied human beings who actually do live through their children. And, Pete Marinovich and all that stuff. It sucks. I don't think they always do it on purpose. Because if I had a kid, I'd be like, let's learn about writing and law and jiu-jitsu or something like that. But I cannot imagine giving your kids fucking steroids.
It's fucking crazy.
But I've seen so many like crazy ass parents. Like, let's face it, we live in a world where ESPN broadcasts a little league World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all that factors into somebody giving their 14-year-old fucking steroids, which is stupid as shit. So, in closing, I hope all of those parents' dicks fall off, just like Jazz from the reality TV show, who's the prepubescent transgendered dude who's becoming a woman, and she took all these hormone blockers, and it turns out now that all these hormone blockers made her male penis too small to be inverted into a vagina, and she cannot complete this surgery. She, he, whatever it is. Yeah. Don't fuck with your fucking kids, everybody.
Words to live by. What else is going on? Did you see, you probably don't even care about this, but I know you mentioned Serena Williams earlier. Did you see what John McEnroe had to say about her?
Yep.
And
he was right.
Okay.
He's 100%
so,
right, yeah.
Well, let's at least say what he said. Basically, he was doing an interview with NPR. He's gotten a lot of heat and backlash for this. He essentially said that even though Williams has been dominating women's tennis since 1999, which is true, 18 years, if she played the men's circuit, she'd be like 700 in the world. That doesn't mean I don't think Serena is an incredible player. I do, but the reality of what would happen would be, I think, something that perhaps it would be a little higher, perhaps it would be a little lower, and on a given day, Serena could beat some players. I didn't find this controversial at all. There's a reason there's men's and women's leagues, divisions. There's a reason Ronda Rousey doesn't fight Henin Barrow. And there's, because men are, stronger, faster, whatever. It just doesn't work out. And even Serena has said she couldn't beat most men. She actually played an exhibition match and lost to the 203rd ranked male player in the world. I think it was like 6-1, 6-1. Like she won two games out of the whole match. And that's okay, but I don't even think she'd be in the top 700, to be honest. I bet there's more than 700 men on earth who could beat her at tennis right now. I bet there's thousands. And it just is what it is. It's not a good thing, a bad thing. It is what it is. It's not even sexist. Like, she just can't compete with people who can hit that much harder and are that much quicker. It's life.
Yeah, I don't know why this is a story. I get that tennis has an kind of odd history because of the, Billie Jean King shit in the 70s. But, like, men are just bigger and stronger, faster. That's just how we are. Like, a 150-pound man is small. A 150-pound woman is big. doesn't mean that women are, you know, inferior. They're just physically smaller because, I don't know, blame genetics, blame evolution, blame God if you want to. It doesn't matter. That's reality. Like the male, you know, male tennis players serve on average, like, I think 30 or 40 miles per hour faster than the women. And Serena, you know, makes her success based on her ability to serve fast. It doesn't mean that she's a poor player in any more than when you watch women's gymnastics, the men do certain events and the women do certain events. It's fine. I don't know why anybody gives a fuck that there are these physiological differences. Other than, I think it's so, you know, there is something to be said that we have organized society around the things that men are excel at, and maybe we need to change that. But don't tell me that women can do what men can do, because that's not true. And everybody knows it. Because, again, I'm a 200-plus pound man, and I'm not incredibly fat or anything. I'm fat fuck right now. But a 200-plus pound woman in my height would be a gigantic blob just because the way that we're all built or whatever, and that's fine. The only thing we can ever do as a society is give an equal opportunity. We cannot guarantee an equal outcome. And so long as an equal opportunity exists, and we're close to that. No, we're not there yet. We have a lot of work to do. But for the most part, men and women, if they want to say, I want to be a biologist, or I want to try, you know, dunk a basketball, well, guess what? Probably 95%+ of men in NCAA 1 basketball can dunk a basketball. Meanwhile, I turn on ESPN, like, look at this woman dunk a basketball in the WNBA, and it's one of them.
All right.
And you know what's sad is that we try to compare them, but it's not fair because when I watch, like, you know, soccer, I think the women's game of soccer is far more entertaining. They don't fucking dive. They don't, you know, the slightest contact doesn't matter anything. They are fucking bruisers. Is a way better game, and that's great. I'm glad for it. So stop fucking trying to pretend like everybody's everything different. Just look what you see on TV and go, I like that, and just like the shit you like. That's all I have to say about it, unless you have a clit bigger than my dick.
Then you'd have more to say about it?
I would want that woman to be executed, because I would feel like less of a man.
Where can we go from there?
Have you? By the way, everybody, I want everybody to know that right now that Matt does the fucking yeoman's job, in that he has to corral my drunk bullshit and make it coherent. He does a phenomenal job. So Matt, I love you, and you'll be my number two when I run the world.
Oh, thank you. That's a scary thought. Have you heard about the progressive liberal?
You have to define that a little bit more for me, but sure.
He's an independent wrestler.
Yes, I do know him, yeah.
He is an independent wrestler in Eastern Kentucky. He's not real great in the ring, and he doesn't really cut a good promo, but he's doing these pro-Hillary and Bernie promos, and he's calling the fans, like, uneducated, and he's going to teach them about progressive values and how to make the country better, redistributing wealth. And he plays a heel character, and he gets booed, and I don't know. The hillbillies in Kentucky don't like him. And it's a hilarious gimmick, and it's actually getting some press. If you Google the progressive liberal, like, there's like six or seven articles today. Like, I saw this yesterday, but other sites and stuff have picked it up. Like, the Washington Post has an article about wrestling's new villain named himself Progressive Liberal and has Hillary's on his shirt. Like, he's got, like, multiple pictures of Hillary Clinton on, like, his ring gear. It's a funny gimmick. I don't think he's good. I don't think he's talented, but it's a funny gimmick that's getting some press in indie wrestling in Eastern Kentucky. So he's doing something right.
I give the guy a lot of credit because he essentially worked everybody. Like, I saw Deadspin, Washington Post, and all these writing about him. But it's not really – we've seen this kind of gimmick before. He's not very good in the ring. He's just kind of like right place, right time. And I feel like he plays to the, you know, stereotypical liberal journalist bias. And they're like, oh, look at this. We this guy, he's pretending to be one of us amongst all these right-wing racist hillbillies. And he's a villain. And so we'll write about him. And then everyone will read it and go, huh, look at that. All those red staters, what a bunch of losers. They don't give a fuck about it. They're not going to buy tickets or anything. Like, it won't actually do anything, but good for him for getting his little bit of attention. We've seen this kind of gimmick before. We've seen the uber right-wing pro-patriotic guy, you know, Hulk Hogan. And we've seen the crazy liberal guys before. And it, to me, it's just one of those things where a pro wrestler worked everybody. And again, he didn't work them in the sense it's a lie, because the articles I've read said he really does believe these things, but he knows what he's doing. He's fucking in Kentucky talking about, I love Hillary Clinton. Oh, for fuck's sake. If pro wrestling was a really big deal, like, let's face it, if pro wrestling was a huge deal in Massachusetts, like, everybody lived and died by it, and somebody came out saying, I fucking love Donald Trump, he'd be a huge heel. But it's not a big deal in Massachusetts. And I know I messaged you about this, but we see this all the time in that, look at how many movies in Hollywood feature right-wing villains versus left-wing villains. You never see a villain that is a left-winger. We like that show Kiefer Sutherland is doing right now on ABC, Designated Survivor. It looks like the heels are right-wing extremists. And when they redid the Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington, it was right-wing extremists doing it. And that's fine. That's who they see as their villain. And for that, you know, demographic, it plays. And I don't know if they actually give a shit, but that's just the way the world works. And so good for this guy for getting this publicity and, you know, he's getting all the rub from halfguarded.com, and we all know that's a very, very significant rub.
It is. It's a big deal for sure. His finisher is called the Liberal Agenda, so the announcers will say, ah, he just hit him with the Liberal Agenda.
Oh, that's a waste. It should be called the Abortifacient.
What?
An abortifacient. It's the, you know, instead of a, it's the thing that causes an abortion.
Okay.
Abortifacient. Like, are you 82? I'm too drunk to say it, but the abortion pill is from abortifacient. Yeah.
Huh.
Or it should be called the tax hike, and he slams him down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good too.
Now, if I was a fucking indie wrestler in Kentucky, I would fucking be out there every day prancing around in a fucking tutu being like, I love gay people, and I hate Jesus, and I want to raise all your taxes. Woo-wee! And I'd rub my nipples and be like, I'm gonna hit the tax increase right now, and I'd do a powerbomb.
That would probably get over. It reminds me of like some stuff, like old Cornette stuff from SMW, like back in the day. It's just like the videos are so, like, the quality sucks and the gimmick is like so obvious and so blatant, but for some reason I find it amusing.
No, I agree with you, and you're a very smart man, and you're right.
Mm. Did you hear about the woman who shot her boyfriend in a YouTube stunt?
I saw three or four headlines about it, but I did not see any of the clips or anything.
I haven't seen the clips of it either. I don't know if those are out there. But apparently they have a kid, and they were expecting a second.
Of course.
And basically this woman from Minnesota has been charged over the fatal shooting of her boyfriend.
They won't have a third kid at least.
She might. And what authorities say was a social media stunt gone wrong. She's 19 and has been booked into county jail after shooting Pedro Ruiz as he held a book to his chest believing it would stop the bullet.
What?
The couple's three-year-old child and nearly 30 onlookers watched as she fired the fatal bullet into his chest. Ruiz's aunt said they did it to increase their social media following. I'll keep going until you tell me to stop.
So somebody watched a fucking Harry Houdini video and said, yeah, if you just put the book in front of yourself, you'll survive. And then they got murdered because they're a fucking moron. She should probably not go to jail. She should be locked away forever, and the kids should be deported to Puerto Rico, because that's probably better than any life they would ever have in fucking Minnesota. These are fucking moron human beings, and I'm glad that we will not have to have his sperm procreate anymore, even though we already have at least one, if not two, dumbass bastard children who will no doubt one day look at somebody and be like, hey, baby, if I shoot the bullet, can you catch your teeth? Yes, I can. I'll fucking time it just right. Let's do it on YouTube, and boom, and you see your fucking brain splatter against the fucking wall like a Jackson Pollock painting.
So the kid's aunt said that he wanted to do the stunt because he wanted more viewers and he wanted to get famous. He told me about the gun idea. And
make
I said,
a sex tape, asshole.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Why are you going to use a gun? Why?
Well, he's right, at least. They're more famous.
The aunt said they were in love and they loved each other. It was just a prank gone wrong.
Yes.
So she's facing charges of second-degree manslaughter. She's going to be in court, actually, on Wednesday, which would be today. But I don't have that information here. Police seized two cameras, which are said to have recorded Monday's incident. The single gunshot was fired from about 1 foot away as neighbors gathered to watch outside their Minnesota home. She told deputies that the stunt had been Ruiz's idea and that he had to convince her to do it. Earlier that day, she tweeted about her reservations. In the tweet, she wrote, "Me and Pedro are probably going to shoot one of the most dangerous videos ever. His idea, not mine."
So fucking Twitter is evidence that somebody's not...
yeah, she has an alibi. She's got an alibi. It wasn't her idea to shoot him from a foot away.
Thing is, I actually don't really give a fuck because she took a really, really dumb person from this earth, and it's a good thing, and if she goes to jail, some guard will fuck her, probably, but just... What the fuck is wrong with everybody?
Yeah.
He shot him from a foot away? What did they think was going to happen? What was their end goal here?
I don't know. He said it was to be famous and get more views on YouTube.
Well, he probably succeeded that way.
Maybe. I have a feeling this video is not up on YouTube at the moment. And then the other one along the same lines, these crazy kids and their social media nowadays, they're crazy. I know you heard about this. This is about a week ago, but I don't think we ever talked about it. A Massachusetts woman accused of encouraging her boyfriend to kill himself before his suicide was found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. It was in Massachusetts. This woman faces up to 20 years in prison after her conviction in the death of 18-year-old Conrad Roy III, who died from carbon monoxide poisoning inside his pickup truck in July of 2014. Essentially, she was texting back and forth with this kid, and the kid was saying he was depressed, he was going to kill himself, and she essentially texted him to get in the truck and do it. And encouraged him to commit suicide. So she's being held liable for these text messages and phone calls. during his suicide attempt. It's a weird situation, and it's one of those things that 20 years ago would have been impossible because nobody had cell phones and they weren't common, and now people are doing and saying stupid things, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, or podcasts.
I got the reference there. It's fine. Yeah, but what you said was true in that laws have to evolve with society.
Mm.
And sure. What this girl did was, I have a tough time blaming her, even though she's like 17, because I think that historically we have looked at 18 as being like this line of demarcation where you're an adult now. But so many people have not matured at that age. They're not adults. They go to college and, you know, this is the same girl that would, you know, get fucking shit-faced and fuck five guys. And you go, why did you do that? She went, I didn't know any better. Because she doesn't know any better. She's not an adult. She's been, you know, she's not had the life experiences. Her prefrontal cortex is not developed enough. And so she's not really truly an adult, but in this case, it was more than just saying, oh, go kill yourself. It was, he got out of the car and said, what should I do? And she said, get back in there and kill yourself.
Mm, it's fucked up.
And to me, that's where she crossed the line, but she's not a normal... She is a normal 17-year-old, but I think that we have had such a profound change in society as far as what we expect of people at a certain age. You know, people always talk about, crazy example, but the Virgin Mary with Jesus, right? People always say she was like 13 or 14 years old, but that was normal back then. 200 years ago, you know, you're a 14-year-old girl, yeah, you're bleeding? Yeah, you can have a kid. And you go off and you become an adult. And I think a lot of people back then, 18 or 19 years old, they'd been on their own. They'd had a wife, a kid, a family, a farm, whatever it may be. Whereas, you know, you and I mean, let's face it, you're far more evolved than I am, but, you know, I'm a fucking man-child right now. And at 18, I was more of a man-child, and I suspect that a lot of the people growing up now are not as developed as people think they should be. And I see a 17-year-old girl, and I don't want to put a ton of blame on her, even though I do think that she contributed to this kid's death. I think there's some degree of culpability, but I don't think she has the mental wherewithal to have truly appreciated it like a 50 or 60-year-old would. And I think it's a fucked up situation where we live in a world wherein people can influence other people and none of them are really mature enough to do so. I'm done.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, ultimately, that's what the jury kind of had to decide, right? Whether or not she was an adult, basically, and could have made that decision to send those texts. Is she too, like, it's weird, too, because it's in text. I mean, I can't tell you how many times somebody's texted me or I've texted something. Nothing like that, obviously, but she get, and clearly nothing got lost in translation in her texts. But, like, just basing something on a text message, a lot of shit can be misinterpreted, as opposed to actually speaking to somebody or seeing somebody in person. I can't tell you how many times I've read a text message and been like, Are you kidding me right now? Like, why would they say that to me or whatever? What, you got to be, like, pissed off about this text. And then you talk to the person, they're like, no, I didn't even mean that. It's like, oh, all right, I misunderstood. And it, clearly, that wasn't the case. When you say get back in the car, it's clear what you're saying. But moving forward, I think it could be a weird situation where it's hard to interpret a text where you're writing your as you are and BRB and LOL, and there's going to be court cases determined on shit like that with teenagers. It's kind of a slippery slope, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's, again, it's a generational gap. And what are you, born in 1979. Okay. I read this thing today where I think you and I are kind of this weird, I think they call it like a Star Wars generation between 79 and 83.
I've had debates with people about this, yeah.
We're not millennials, but we're not quite Gen X.
Right.
We're the people that knew the analog world and a digital world. And I think a lot of kids these days are growing up in a pure digital world, and it's, I think it's tough for us to understand that they are not, they have not been raised to appreciate the damage that a text message can do. Because you and I are like, yeah, when, you know, somebody says some bullshit on the internet, I'm like, whatever, I don't give a fuck, and I ignore it. But if you've spent your entire life with the internet, that's far more impactful.
Yeah, I mean, there's all that bullying stuff, too, the bullying campaigns, the cyberbullying. Exactly. I mean, it's a thing. I think, like anything, we talk about this all the time, society evolves and hopefully people get better. But I think kids and the generation coming up where, you know, when you're 9, 10 years old, you have an iPhone. Like, that's not unusual. That they're going to be more aware of it and maybe be a little more careful, and it's a different kind of bullying than just shoving a kid in a locker or flushing his head in the toilet or whatever the traditional bullying was. But it can still be cutting. It can still be painful and screw up kids' heads, impressionable kids who are having a hard time in life as it is, you know, hormones raging and everything else going on, to be getting text messages when you're thinking about suicide, encouraging you to do it, could easily push you over the edge.
Yeah, and again, I feel for you because you know, have kids, but I think it's one of those things where the basic principle of stand up to the bully, don't let them push you around, applies. When, you know, you and I were growing up, it was physical. The bully pushed you around, you go, fuck you, and you know, you punch him back. Even if you get your ass kicked, you still stood up for yourself. I don't know what it is online, but there's probably some social media equivalent to that. And I think the kids growing up need to, you know, just do that. Because they can't, you know, nobody...
Find a good GIF.
Exactly. Or GIF. GIF or GIF... We are so old, we don't even know what the term will be. You know, kids, just Snapchat somebody something really biting, and then you'll be a winner.
That's right. And there was one more thing I was thinking we should talk about. Did we talk about GLOW, that TV show?
Yep.
We talked about that. There's one other. There was something else. Crap.
What a show, everyone.
I forget what it was. Shit. It was something more positive. I wanted to end on a more positive note.
I'm full of positivity.
Suicide and book shootings.
I fucking love everybody in the world right now, actually.
That's nice.
No, I really do. Like, I got it.
I found it. We've done this a couple times. 19 years ago today, what happened? That's what makes it more challenging. I don't tell you the years.
1998, that would be, well, that's a good year. NSYNC did shit. I finished my first year of high school, second year, I don't know. 1998, Bill Clinton was getting a dick sucked. Good for you, Bill. AOL did something, I don't know.
on this very day, 19 years ago today, The Undertaker and Mankind had their first Hell in a Cell match where Taker threw Foley off the cage. That classic match was 19 years ago today. Wasn't anything really profound in the world, but in the wrestling world, classic, all-time, memorable match you'll ever see. Really kind of, I don't want to say it made Undertaker's career and Foley's career, but it's probably, maybe besides the Michaels matches for Taker, the most memorable match of either guy's career.
I remember I watched that match with my grade school and high school best friend, Pat Brown. And to this day, when Undertaker threw Foley off the cage, it was better than any other cage bump anybody ever took because it looked like he actually threw him off the cage. And I can distinctly remember JR's comment of, "They killed him." It was not he killed him. It was they killed him. It was this pure, raw emotion of, this business killed this man. He did not expect it. WWE, WCW, NWA, all of them killed Mick Foley. And then Mick Foley somehow fucking got up, climbed to the top of the cage again, and got chokeslammed through it. It may be the greatest wrestling match of all time from a drama perspective, because I just watched it, and then they fucking pried off the tacks. It was insane. It was my best friend Pat Brown's house. It was not his house. It was actually his grandma's house next door. And I remember watching it. We recorded on VHS. As soon as it was over, we ran back to his parents' house. We made a copy for myself so I could go back to my house and watch it. And I watched it over and over again. One of the greatest memories I've ever had in my life. It was just
wow.
Stunning. Yeah.
I mean, to me, it was always that second bump where he got chokeslammed. That was the bad one. Like, I think he claimed, like, the cage was like, supposed to give away slowly.
Yeah.
But his fat ass just fell right through that thing. And it was like a flat back bump where he, like, folded in half. Then, to top it all off, not only do you have this huge fall to that hard ring, but, like, there was a chair on top of the cage fell and landed on his head, like, on top of it. Like, talk about just bad luck. And, I mean, it was crazy, too, because Foley had always had that rep of taking reckless bumps and doing that dumbass elbow drop to the floor and just falling onto the floor and just taking a beating, and that's how he made his career. I mean, towards the end, obviously, he did great promos, too. But, like, you see him now, and I just feel sorry for him. Like, I wish he had worked a safer style his whole career. Not necessarily, like, the Socko crap, but just a little more conservative and maybe not, like, getting beer bottles broke over his head in, like, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania against Sabu. Like, just, like, shitty little indie shows where he was doing way more than he needed to. And saved himself a little bit.
Yeah, but that's Foley. Yeah.
I know, and that's why he made the money he did and got where he was. But it's like
hot daughter.
I'm not sure if the bumps help that in any way, but I don't know. Just 19 years ago, and also it made me feel old because it's like I'm 37 now, so like. I'm like halfway past that. I'm like double that age. It's just a weird thing.
Yeah, I feel old too. That's really, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, like the kid I hired, we were talking about earlier, 2001. He wasn't even. It was 3 years before he was born. That Foley match, Foley Taker, Hell in a Cell. You know what I mean?
To me, it's just the idea that. It's probably like my grandparents. They knew what Pearl Harbor was like.
Right.
My parents didn't know.
Sure. And yeah.
To me, like 9/11 is it's fucking 9/11.
Right.
Like I can remember waking up and just being stunned and watching the TV and being like, what's happening? This curiosity and fear and terror. It was just, and meanwhile, there are people who live right now who are going to read in a textbook and be like, read chapter 5 about 9/11, and then they move on. And it's, I guess that's good, because that's the world. I guess it's good the world progresses that way, but fuck me, man. Like, we're old, and everything we live through, maybe it doesn't matter. That's awful.
I think it's all relative. You know what I mean? Time and place. And, like, my kids are going to obviously have no recollection of 9/11 or really what it meant or any of it. You can try and explain it to them.
They won't even know Trump.
I bet my daughter will.
No.
She knows Trump now.
How old is she?
she's 9.
Who was president when you were 9?
Reagan?
Yeah, do you remember a lot about Reagan?
You know what's weird about memories like that? You see stuff now and you don't know what the memory was. If it was of him or if it's stuff you saw when you were 15. I don't know.
You don't have an emotional connection to it at all.
To Reagan? I feel like he was the president when I was growing up. Because obviously 80 to 88.
Yeah, Clinton was more of a president though.
Yeah, but by the time Clinton, I was already, 92? I was already 13, so you're talking like 13 to 21. I don't know. It's weird.
She'll be fine. She'll have, like, you know, Joe Biden memories in a couple of years. It's fine.
You think he's going to be president?
I fucking hope so.
Really? Biden?
I fucking love, Biden as a man. Yeah.
So, why?
I think he's just a good dude.
Yeah.
Like, I think the whole, like, bullshit, like, he took the fucking subway from Delaware to D.C. all those years. It's just something about him. I think, always felt like Obama was kind of, like, manufactured and, like, coddled. But I felt like Biden was just, he's just real. Like, there's something about him, even though he's kind of old. But you know what? Trump's going to be old, too. Like, there's no way in shit that dude makes it 78 or whatever it'll be, so let's go with Biden and Biden 2020. Let's go for it, everybody. Vote for Biden.
Trump doesn't look all that healthy. I would agree. I don't think Biden wants it. I think Biden would rather go on ultra luxurious vacations like Obama.
Everybody wants to be president, though.
Yeah, I don't.
Everybody wants to have a paragraph in a textbook.
Yeah, maybe. I know we talked about it a little bit. Did you see those articles about Obama going on vacation?
Yeah.
People don't like him going on vacations. It's very odd to me. I can see caring about what he does when he's president, but when he's, like, retired and not doing anything, why do you give a shit what island he goes to? Like, it's over. It's done with. Like, let's move on. Like, I don't care what George Bush is doing right now. I don't care where Jimmy Carter is at the moment. It's like, who gives a fuck? Well, it's like, the guy was the most important person in the world for 8 years and was under a constant microscope. Let's just move on. Like, I know that there's the argument that he shouldn't be hanging out with billionaires because he had this progressive agenda when he was in office and wanted to, whatever, raise taxes on the rich, whatever it might be. And on the surface, it could be hypocritical, but it doesn't matter anymore because he's not in office. It's like, give the guy a break, I would say.
I mean, none of it matters. Nobody's votes will be swayed, so it's just a talking point thing to talk about. It's hypocritical. Hypocritical bullshit, because Obama never actually had a job in his life. Like, he's never actually worked for a company. All he ever did was be a public, quote-unquote, public servant. And at the end of his life, he gets...
He never worked for, like, law firms or anything? Wasn't...
No. He taught constitutional law, which anybody who was in law school knows is a bullshit class. Like, it's a fucking bullshit class.
Why?
Because it's a peer political class. If you take criminal law, torts, contracts, whatever, you learn the elements of a contract needs to be the meeting of the minds and so on and so forth. Torts needs to be, an unintentional harm that somebody cannot have redressed. Con law is just, what did you think when the Supreme Court said that the abortion should be legal or gay marriage should be legal, whatever it may be. It was never actually a full professor. He just did some guest lecturing. Then he was like, a state senator, then a senator in Illinois. But I've seen so much shit in Illinois where if you succeed as a politician in this state, you must be corrupt. And then he's president, and I actually, he did fine for 8 years. I didn't agree with a lot of the stuff he did. I don't support universal health care or anything like that, but he did fine. He was a good guy. I think, he has little NC2A picks and all that stuff, fine. But when you hold yourself out to be the progressive champion of the little guy, and then within months of leaving, you're on private islands, you're, flying around the world, being with the rich of the rich, it looks bad.
I get that, but at the same time,
like Bill Clinton, no one cared about because Bill was a sleazeball. We expected him, like, if there was a report that Bill Clinton was in a strip club in Atlanta, you'd be like, yeah, he was. And, Jimmy Carter, the previous Democrat, way back when, he went to, like, Habitat for Humanity, and he built homes and did that shit. Obama is just enjoying a life of luxury, and he rallied against the rich. He didn't like the rich people and the elite bankers and all that shit. Meanwhile, he's with the elite of the elite. And I think, rightfully so, people on his side, at least, think, what are you doing? And on the other side, they go, really, dude? You wanted to raise taxes on all these people, but you'll take a free plane flight, hotel, vacation, all that from them. You're a hypocrite. And I think it undermines what he did before. But you know what? It doesn't matter because nobody gives a fuck. Like, regular people do not care. People in Nebraska, South Dakota, Ohio, they don't care about any of this.
Right, it's
a beltway issue, and that's it.
No, but I think no one should care anyway. If he was still in office, it would be one thing. It would look shady going to these resorts with billionaires and hanging out with them. But let him hang out with whoever he wants. If he hangs out with rich people or poor people, I don't care. I just don't care. He's gone. It doesn't matter.
It's because it's so close to him leaving office. Like, yes.
Yeah.
If he's in office, it'd be like, if he did this while he was president, he'd be like, what the fuck's going on? But does 4 or 5 months make a big difference?
No.
Do you really think there's just some gigantic separation where, like, he's now a private citizen? He goes, hey, David Geffen, how you doing? I'm Barack Obama. Oh, really? I haven't heard of you before. I'll shake your hand. You want to come to my private island? Why not? I'm half black. Let's go for it. But no, we all know exactly why he's got these opportunities. And that's, again, that's the nature of the beast. All these dudes have it. I'm sure W had his thing. And, Clinton had his thing. And HW had his thing. And Reagan would have had his thing, but he forgot about it. And that's how it works.
Right, but don't you think if anybody deserves it, it's like former presidents who had, like, literally, like, the most stressful, difficult job possible for the last, 4, 8 years, whatever it might be, constant Secret Service, constant crises, constant debates. You're the face of the country, the most powerful person on earth. I don't care what island he goes to, whether it's with Richard Branson or Anthony Hopkins or whatever billionaire. It's petty, and it's just like, move on.
You're right. You're absolutely right, except for when he was president, he told all those people, you should not have this. And maybe their job was not as stressful as being president, but it's pretty fucking crazy.
Mm.
All those guys had this insane pressure. insane responsibility. And Obama said, you should not get as much money as you are getting right now. He told all of them, you are not worth what you are getting right at this moment. And yet, within 5 months of him leaving office, he was willing to take all of those benefits.
I know, but essentially you're talking about raising taxes on somebody. Sure. Like, if can't you think somebody should pay more in taxes and be friends with them?
Yeah, except for okay. if you say to somebody, hey, you should not have as much money as you have.
Right.
And then the next day say, I want to enjoy some of your money. That's kind of, you know, it's a little fucked up.
Yeah, although if somebody calls you and they're a billionaire and you're a private citizen and maybe you're looking to get into business or do whatever it is you're going to do after that. I mean, the guy's only like in, what, his mid-50s or something, if that.
Should the president of the United States be using his power to say, hey, you're really rich. You want to make me rich? I bet I can do you a favor here on the other end.
No, but again, we don't even know what the hell is what the backstory is. I don't know. Half of these people he met while he was in office, when he wanted to raise their taxes. It's not like he became friends with Richard Branson after he left office. I'm sure he's probably been friendly with him for years at fucking dinners and galas and whatever bullshit they do. Besides,
what
in the country?
I mean, if you're Richard Branson,
mm-hmm.
you have let's say $1 billion.
Okay.
You talk to the President of the United States.
Right.
You become friends with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the President says something to you, and you're happy with it. Do you think that he made you more or less money?
Probably more money.
Exactly.
I get what you're saying, but I don't know. Bottom line to me, whether it's nefarious or what, however you want to describe it, I don't care because it's over with. He's gone. Let's focus on the people who are in office now, not some guy who's on vacation.
No, I don't give a shit either. Like, frankly, like, I mean, if I was him, I'd do the exact same thing. I'd fucking milk that shit for all it's worth. I would try not to, like, fuck over the American people. But if I could, like, if there was a situation where I'd be like, you know what? America will be good. And I get a fucking badass vacation for a couple months in Barbados. Yeah, let's do it. So
right.
good for you, Obama. And, you know, make your NC2A picks. And I hope that your wife's fine ass is good for fucking.
On that note, I think we should call it a show.
Yep,
So, no, like we said, no major shows this weekend except the Professional Fighters League. So I'm sure there will be some MMA news stories that break between now and next week. Somebody will get injured. Somebody will pop for USADA. We will certainly be back next week with all the news in MMA. Thank you for listening to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com.
Normal. Normal. Come on, guys. Normal. You have nothing. Normal. Two legs. Two arms. Normal.
I think every time he watches that last fight, you know, I'm under his skin. I mean, every time you watch memes of him getting held by Cain Velasquez crying, you know, that gets under his skin. So
is your, like,
my
hatred?
Mere existence gets under his skin.
The bad gimmicks he's given that's ruined potentially good talent's careers. The bad writing that he's done that's ruined, you know, promotions to possibly compete with Vince. The stupid shit that he did when he was with Vince that he takes credit for, you know, the big boom period when there's Steve Austin and The Rock and a network quality production facility and Jim Ross, the best announcer in the history of wrestling, and all of these tools that he had at his disposal. And, you know, he was writing fucking midgets and people painted fucking colors and everything and takes credit for the big, it just, the whole thing.